This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
I'm Beth Golay, and this is Marginalia, the podcast where we visit with authors about information located beyond the pages of a book. This episode features an interview I had recently with Benjamin Rybeck. His book, The Sadness, focuses on two central characters, twin brother and sister, Max and Kelly. Max is a failed filmmaker and obsessive film fan, and Kelly, well, she's a failed adult, obsessively looking for her long-deserted father. With layer upon beautiful layer of stylized storytelling, Rybeck has penned a rich, smart, impressive novel about the burdens of family, the nuances of filmmaking, and the disappointments of life. Although he describes them in more simple terms.
It's a book about film, family, and failure. I think that if you've ever been a person who really likes movies while regularly feeling like your life is spinning radically out of control, then this is probably the book for you.
What is your background with film?
Being a fan, I don't have any formal background. In the book, one of the two central characters is a failed filmmaker and film fan who has spent most of his life, including his high school time, obsessively watching films and inventing these convoluted theories around them, but he never had a lot of talent to go out and make a movie, or at least he didn't have the drive. That is more or less exactly my background with film. I got out of the house eventually, and that character didn't. So that's what makes us different. But otherwise, that's essentially my background with film. It's right there in the book.
You're referring to Max Enright, and he is one of the two main characters are twins, Max and his sister Kelly. Is that right?
Right. That's correct.
You know, when I was reading the book, I was wondering, does Max have Asperger's? Was I just reading him all wrong?
The book never says that or makes that clear. I don't think I ever thought about Max as fitting into a particular diagnosis of mental illness. I'm always wary of trying to do that kind of thing as a writer, because then as soon as you name it, people nitpick its accuracy. So there was no particular psychological ailment that I had thought of him as having, other than your good old garden variety American depression, which both he and Kelly have pretty cripplingly, I think, in a lot of ways.
Because he was a brilliant film critic, I guess,
yeah.
Like maybe an armchair critic or something. And I'm trying to remember now who referred to him as a cinema savant. You know, when he was at the table, when they had the dinner at the high school,
yeah,
he was in his element almost. He was mm-hmm. perfectly fine. I don't know why, in my mind, I was trying to label him, and I shouldn't have. So I apologize, Max.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure Max would probably be comforted in a way to know that there was perhaps a diagnosis for what he has, and then perhaps some kind of treatment. I think that he is an obsessive. That's the only kind of underlying condition that I ever imagined him having.
And then Kelly,
mm-hmm.
She's traveled everywhere, but she also has gone absolutely nowhere since high school.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about her?
She has the opposite ailment from what Max has, which is that Max never got anywhere because he fixated obsessively on just one thing. Kelly never really got anywhere because she never found even a handful of things that she was interested in. She's spent most of her adult life just kind of wandering the American Southwest, in particular, from one job to another and one interest to another, without ever quite finding the thing that makes her her, you know. I think she's in search of the book has this riff on the title of the Robert Musil book, Man Without Qualities, which is a book that Kelly would never read in her life. But she sees the title and it gets her thinking about the nature of a quality. And she's spent most of her life trying to figure out who she is or what exactly it is that makes her her. While also being a little wary of that pursuit, because she has seen the way that her mother and her brother, Max, decided at a certain point in their life that this is the thing I am, this is the thing I'm going to do, and they never were able to look outside of it, and it crippled them a bit. if that makes sense.
It does. And, when you were mentioning that Kelly was trying to find an interest in something, like when she decided Texas Hold'em was what she was going to do, or I loved that whole, I'm looking at 7 paragraphs now, where you outlined exactly what she tried at all different stages of her life.
In that section of the book, there's a sentence or two. I don't remember exactly what it says, because, when you publish a book, you have to read it over and over again. Until you stop being able to see the center of it in most cases. But there's one or two sentences there in the middle of that whole section where Kelly, that's kind of going back over some of Kelly's life and her failures. And there's one part where she basically says there's so much of adult life that remains mysterious to her. And there's a few examples she gives, one of which is like, how many different sizes of curtains are there to buy and hang on your windows? Or how do you know how often you're supposed to go to the doctor? And every time that I would read through the book again, I would always kind of start to feel like I was losing the center of the book just because I'd read it so many times. And then I would get to those lines and I would say, oh, yeah, that's kind of the center of the book to me in a lot of ways. Just that sense of being completely, it's like it's not like you kind of know how to do a lot of things. It's like you don't know how to do anything. You get to this point where you just realize you don't know how to do anything,
Mm-hmm. This one section where you had outlined all of the different jobs, job to job to job, it's not a huge departure from the way you wrote the rest of the book. I mean, you were just outlining paragraphs, but there were some sections that took on a different form, like almost the footnote conversation that was going on, or, when you would have a screenplay listed. The book took on a lot of different forms, and I wanted to know how you wrote those forms. Did you decide later, I think I'll put this conversation in here, or I'll delve into exactly what was said under the bridge, or I don't know. I just wanted to know a little bit about your process and when you decided what form to use for what part of the book.
The earlier drafts of the book had a lot more of those I guess you'd call them found texts, right? The earlier drafts of the book had a lot more of those in there. And I'm not exactly sure what appealed to me about them, except that it seemed in most cases like a fun way to open up a different side of a character. And also, some of those earlier found texts and some of the ones that remain in the book deliver a certain amount of expository information. And if you are bored of writing, just kind of quote unquote straightforward close third person narration, then it becomes fun to exposit certain things in other ways. It also just makes the world seem a little realer around the characters, I think. Like they actually exist in a reality that has the same things in it that the reader's reality has, and as a result, it helps me, I think, as a writer, level off what is otherwise kind of kind of an over the top plot in a lot of ways. Like the book plays with a lot of generic elements, and it's kind of a noir, and it's got a bunch of stuff that goes a little over the top, and the characters are kind of over the top in their way. So I think that was the original impulse behind the found texts. So for instance, in earlier drafts, there were a lot more of them. There was like Wikipedia entries about things, and there was a collection of Kelly's school papers that she'd written during her aborted time as a college student and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that can feel gimmicky fairly quickly if you do too much of it. And so at a certain point, the project of the revision became to, well, one of the projects of the revision became to take those things out, because in some cases they were doing some world building, but they weren't exactly important to what was the main narrative line of the book.
Talk to me about Portland, Maine. Do you have a history there?
Yeah, well, I'm from there. I was born there.
You were?
Mm-hmm. And I grew up around there. I lie a lot and I say that I grew up in Portland. I didn't actually grow up in Portland. I grew up a town over, but I spent a lot of time there.
Have you ever worked as a police officer?
No, I haven't.
Yet there's an Officer Rybak in this book.
Yeah, well, that's my dad.
Oh.
My dad is a police officer in Portland, Maine, so I just threw his name in the book because I thought it would be funny.
It is funny.
I threw a lot of names of people that I used to know in the book just because I thought it was funny to do that, because I thought it would be funny if, like, my friend who I haven't talked to in 10 years just, like, happened to pick up a book that I wrote and found his or her name in the book. So I thought that that would be funny. And then I panicked right before the book was coming out because I worried that maybe it wasn't going to be funny to people. But so far, there haven't been any complaints.
Good. You know, if Beth Golay ever shows up in a book of yours and she's ditzy, I will go back to this day. This day.
Okay. Well, you know, no one was based on anyone.
I know. You just chose the name.
Just fun names. I don't know. I just thought it was funny.
Talk to me about the sadness. I mean, the actual concept of the sadness. It's a quality found in some films, correct?
Yes. Yeah, according to Max and his mother before him, who was a film nut, too, and also kind of a failed artist who has passed away as well. But she kind of left Max with this kind of obsession with film, and part of that hinges on this concept of the sadness that his mother invented and that Max has kind of fleshed out in his adult life, or tried to anyway.
Do you think it exists?
No, I don't know. I think that the way that they describe it in the book, I mean, basically the general gist of it is that a great film contains this quality called the sadness, which is this feeling of the director trying to save his or her life through the making of the film. And Max sees things in a very black and white way, and so he will sort of run down the fact of, like, well, John Huston didn't have it, but John Cassavetes had it, and Kurosawa had it for this many films, but then he lost it for these films, and he's become very rigid in his thinking about it. Of course, it's ludicrous that you could, you know, you can't presume to see inside the brain of a filmmaker, right, or anyone. So Max does presume to do that, and so I think that it's kind of ludicrous the way that he explores it. Otherwise, it's a concept that roughly, I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, it's essentially the same thing that the French film critics in the 1950s from Cahiers du Cinéma were talking about when they talked about auteurism in a film, you know, like the idea that, you know, Hitchcock's films have more passion and energy, so he's a better filmmaker than, say, David Lean, who's, like, maybe a better craftsman in some ways, or makes more, quote-unquote, important-seeming movies, but Hitchcock's actually the greater filmmaker, because even though he's doing these little thrillers, they've got passion in them and that kind of thing, you know?
Okay, I just want to go back to your knowledge of film, because I am sitting here just kind of blown away. Maybe I just don't understand film, or I've never studied it. Mm-hmm. But okay, how do you know all of this stuff? I would expect you to know about books. I mean, yes, books. But did you study film?
No, I just watched a lot of movies. I read a lot about movies. And this was mostly, I was talking about Max earlier. I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, I did the same thing that Max was doing in high school, more or less. I sat there and I just watched movies all the time, you know, because I didn't have a lot of friends. And then eventually I got some friends, so that saved me from the life of Max, I think. But it was the first thing in my life that I'd ever found that I was really interested in, even before books, you know. Mm-hmm. I kind of came later to the pleasures of reading. But, yeah, I just read a lot about it. I watched a lot of movies. I just kind of obsessively, you know. I'd go to the video store and rent 6 movies on a Monday and then return them on a Thursday and rent 6 more movies and return them on the Monday. And I'd keep track of everything I watched, too. I have these notebooks that I'd recorded every movie that I'd watched for a certain chunk of time, and I gave them all a star rating. Mm-hmm. And so I will look at those notebooks now, and I will see just no other description of the film, just a star rating. And I'll go and I'll look at those notebooks now, and I will see, you know, a title of a movie, and I'll say, like, 4 stars next to it. So obviously I really liked it. But the title of the movie will ring 0 bell with me. Like, I won't even remember what the movie is, or I couldn't tell you anything about it, you know?
Uh-huh. So I wanted to touch a little bit about Kelly and her search for her dad. It's not like she had never met him, but he stopped coming around when she and Max were really young.
Right.
And what started her latest search for her dad was a phone call she received saying, leave my husband alone, or something like
right.
that. And she
right.
had already lost her job and yep. was losing her apartment. So it was like, well, what else have I got to lose? Right.
Right, essentially, yeah.
And what made her decide to stop looking for him?
At the end of the book?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Someone would probably have to read the book and tell me.
Oh, okay.
I think that Kelly has, I'm trying to figure out exactly how to put it. Kelly has a lack of empathy for her mother throughout much of the book. And she cannot see the thing that her mother went through. Her mother was not perfect, obviously, but her mother was also very young and gave birth to twins and had the guy ditch her, you know? And that is a big thing to put on anyone. And Kelly has never quite been able to understand what her mother went through. And so she's fixated on her father, and she's fixated on these, like, two or three pleasant memories she has of him. But more importantly, she thinks that finding her father, who has money, right, finding her father will solve her money woes. What she doesn't quite understand is that she's doing the exact same thing or playing out something that her mother herself played out, right? Mm-hmm. Which is that the rich father, after he bailed, paid for a large chunk of the mother's life and the kids' lives, sort of in kind of film noir-y or soap opera-y, you know, clandestine ways. So Kelly is basically just retracing those steps that her mother took, you know. And I think when she realizes that she's doing that, which happens late in the book, and she's able to see that she is herself a version of her mother, and through doing that is able to develop some kind of empathy for her, I think that that's finally the thing that that helps her see that maybe the hunt for a person who ditched her when she was a young girl and hasn't wanted anything to do with her, that probably that hunt is mostly self-destructive.
So you mentioned that that everybody in the book was depressed, meaning, you know, Max and Kelly and their mother. Is that also, I mean, is that the sadness as well?
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, it's not the, you know, the sadness is a fairly elastic term, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe not that elastic. But, I mean, yes, I think that's there's a lot of sad people in the book. But I don't think it's a depressing book, and I don't think it's a book without optimism. I think characters change and grow in some kind of good old-fashioned, you know, they learn things about themselves, you know, and they grow as people. And I think that by the end of the book, their lives are not fixed, but they're at least heading potentially in a better direction.
That was Benjamin Rybeck, author of The Sadness, which was published by Unnamed Press. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover new episodes at KMUW.org or through iTunes. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our editor is Luann Stevens. Our engineer is John Cyphers. And I am the producer. This is Marginalia. And for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.